Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me as we bask in the glory of week number one and victory Tuesday, as it were. That's a little different. His fellow contributor, Akshaz Dividula. Akshaz, how are we feeling, man?
Hey, Robert, we're feeling good. Yesterday felt like the first day of school a little bit. You know, a lot of nerves, a lot of excitement to kind of see what was going to happen, what was going to be new. And in the end, it was the same old 49ers. And I think that was my favorite part, was just watching the team play just like with the same identity year over year and just slowly get better on the edges. And I think I got super excited about the future of this team just from that game, even though, like, yeah, as we'll get into, I don't even know if they played all that well.
Wild. It's a 32-19 victory over the New York Jets. The last 6 points were garbage time, Tyrod Taylor nonsense, but, you know, nonetheless, there it is. But what it did give us, those final moments of Tyrod Taylor coming in and throwing a garbage time touchdown. Probably good news for anybody who had Alan Lazard in their fantasy league, if anybody's that crazy, but also gave us Scoregami. For those of you who are not familiar with the concept of Scoregami, it's this, it's a Twitter account, I think only, that basically keeps track of all the scores in that come through in the NFL and tells you whether or not it is an original score. And so we have a Scoregami. It is the 1,085th unique final score in NFL history. So pretty cool that particular score had never happened before, and even more good because the 49ers were on the 32 end of it and not the 19.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Scoregami is really cool. I think I ended up watching the video that, like, created it, and it's just such a random, like, concept that's super, super neat to, like, kind of dive into, and kind of amazing that the Niners ended up with the Scoregami. That's what happens when a team goes for two for no good reason,
right,
and another team kicks, like, multiple field goals. So, you know, weird things happen in the NFL, but that's what makes it fun every week. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a good start for the Niners. I think the first quarter, and we can kind of go through it a little bit. The first quarter was a little less than awe-inspiring, right? And the Niners got the ball first and subsequently, you know, had a decent drive move going down the field, and then ended up in, you know, outside of the red zone and such, and ended up with a field goal. Breece Hall gave the Jets the lead on a pretty impressive drive, I would say, from Aaron Rodgers and company. I think it was the second time they had the ball or the third time they had the ball, and they were up 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. And then I don't know, at that point I was starting to get a little concerned. It was only 7-3, but still it was looking like the 49ers were having one of their patented, like, the season has started, but we're still not quite caught up offensively yet. And so I was a little concerned we were going to get that. Jake Moody gave him pulled within one early in the second quarter. And then, five, 6 minutes later, Deebo Samuel scored the first touchdown of the season for the 49ers, and they never looked back. They subsequently got another field goal from Moody, a Jordan Mason touchdown, another field goal from Moody, and then two more field goals from Moody. If you're keeping track at home, that's a lot of field goals to just get to that 32 points. And from there, the Jets just didn't really look like they were doing much of anything. Their other touchdowns came on a weird offside penalty that Troy Aikman said, or Troy Buck, one of the two, or Joe Buck, one of the two, said that Aaron Rodgers leads the league in touchdowns scored on free plays, which I'm not really sure where that statistic comes from, or even if he actually has statistical evidence to back that up, but they did. And then for some reason, as you noted, they went for two at that point. They cut the lead to 13 as they did not get the 2-point conversion, and then again did not score again until the final seconds of the game. Literally there was 25 seconds left when they scored that final touchdown, and again went for two for some reason. But that, as you said, it gave us the fun 32-19 score. But other than those, like, really from the moment the 49ers took the lead about halfway through the second quarter, it just seemed pretty simple and pretty easy from the 49ers perspective from there on out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that third drive from the Jets, because the first one was the Lazard drop, and everyone was like, oh, Jets, you know, Lazard drops another one. Then the second one, the fourth play of the Jets' offensive season, you know, because that's when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles last year. They fumble, so there's a whole bunch of jokes about that.
Right.
But then it looked surgical, and it was really frustrating because, you know, it looked exactly like kind of what the end of the Super Bowl looked like. It was like passive coverage and just like easy, with an exception of a couple of really, really good throws, just like easy, like holes in the defense. Ironically, from a place where Dre Greenlaw would be. So, you know, a little bit of flashbacks, not some great thoughts like popping back up seeing that. But after that, I just think it looked just like methodical from the 49ers offense. And I think no team was particularly great in this game, but the 49ers were just better at the places that mattered. And it became almost impossible for the Jets to handle it. And like you mentioned, not more field goals than we'd want, but just like a level of offensive domination that put the game out of the hands of the Jets. It's one thing to win. It's another thing to like make it basically impossible for the other team to win. And the 49ers, they could have beaten any team in the NFL with that type of offensive display.
Yeah, the telling number is, and this is not always the case because sometimes time of possession is a little bit misleading, but the 49ers had the ball for over 38 and a half minutes to the Jets, just a hair over 21 minutes. It was 21-20 and 38-40. That level of like ball control in a single game is usually going to end up working out for the team who has control of the ball more often. Just because, you know, frankly, generally speaking, if you have the ball a lot, you're going to be able to generate points out of that. And again, as we'll get into a little bit later, it was maybe a little field goal heavy, but it was certainly a good sight to see the 49ers offense really kick it into gear and start to get some points on the board and just kind of dominate the game as best they could.
Yeah, I mean, just it was fun. Honestly, that's just the best word I can describe for it. It was fun. Like the Niners played a fun brand of football where it was just boom, boom, boom on offense. The Jets look up, they don't even know what hit them. The Niners are like halfway down the field because they just run the ball down their throat. And like, that's a character building win. You know, last year against the Steelers, it was pretty similar, I would say, for the 49ers. The same type
of a little slow start.
Yeah. But like against a pretty good team, a team with a great defense, and it just looked like they like figured it out, right? Of course, that was a little different. That was more in the air, and then McCaffrey got that big run. This was more like this team knows what it's about, and it was ready to like showcase it. And I just love it because, you know, the conversation isn't about like, oh, Trent just got back, Brandon just got back, can they handle all of it? Now it's like, whoa, this team had all that, and they still came out there and put one of the like most hyped teams in the NFL. They put him in a different weight class. I think, you know, so I think Mina Kimes said this. I was watching her podcast. There are really like two teams in the NFL. I don't want to misquote, so I'm not entirely sure. But I think there are two like elite level teams in the NFL, Kansas City and the 49ers. And everyone else has to prove it either by beating one of these teams in the playoffs or just by like going on the level of domination these teams do. Because I mean, the Chiefs and the Niners, it looks like they never play their A game, and their B game is better than, like, basically every other team.
All right. Yeah. Well, you mentioned a name in that little soliloquy there that we have not talked about yet, and I think it's an important thing to get into because we're sort of burying the lead on that a little bit. So let's take us back to last night and the moment where the first bit of bad news came in to where it didn't seem like things were going to go that particularly well. And that was roughly an hour and a half before the game started when the news came out that among the seven inactives for the 49ers was Christian McCaffrey. That was a not so great moment. I was actually out doing a little run, and I got my watch beeped at me, and I got a notification, and they were like, "Oh, the inactives." And I was like, "Oh, that's no big deal. I feel pretty confident about who's going to be on that list." And I'm scrolling down, and I saw a name that I didn't want to see, for two reasons. One, because you know, he just is a good player on the team that I liked and follow, but also I finally got him on my fantasy team, and of course, this is the year that he misses out on week one. So hopefully this is a short-term thing. So let's go back to that moment when you saw the list. Akshaz, what was your initial thought? Because obviously McCaffrey's out and he's not going to play. So what were you thinking?
Well, so those of you who've listened to us for a little while know that I sometimes dip my toes into the world of sports betting a little bit. And I had a premonition based off the fact that he had calf soreness. I was like, I bet Jordan Mason's going to get goal line carries. So what do? I place a bet on Jordan Mason scoring a touchdown. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, really? He's out? And then I was like, whoa, wait, maybe I was actually a genius. And then I was like, oh my gosh, can the 49ers win this game without Christian McCaffrey? Because I imagine with Ayuk kind of, you know, still getting up into game shape and Trent getting into shape, McCaffrey was going to be the focal point, right? Like, he was going to be the guy that, like, made everything go, because he can do everything. He's the reigning offensive player of the year. He was on a short list of who should have won MVP, I think, given his production at running back for the league's best offense last year. And he, like, completely changes the complexion of this 49ers offense. So, I mean, I was definitely worried that he was out. And I think the biggest thing I was worried about was that calf / Achilles, that's a problem area for sure, you know. Mm. I just, yeah. Like, the 49ers, like, Jordan Mason played incredibly, as we're going to get into shortly. But the 49ers need a healthy Christian McCaffrey if they want to get to where they want to go. And this seems like one of those things you just got to manage, and mm-hmm. it's going to be an issue throughout the years. But I was very, very excited that Mason put on the performance he did. It made me forget all about old number 22.
Well, it's 23 for our team, but good try.
No.
22 in Carolina, 23 in your hearts and on your
scorebook. That's how much I forgot.
Oh, poor Christian. Yeah, I mean, I was out there with you. I was obviously like, this is not good. Like, does this mean a longer term thing? And then, of course, all the speculation was coming out like, oh, well, he's not going to play this week. And he's definitely also not going to play next week or the week after because of the turf and yada, yada. And of course, Kyle Shanahan was quick to be like, look, if that's not going to be the deciding factor. Like, if he's good to go, he's good to go. If he's not good to go, it doesn't really matter what the surface is. And they just have to manage it. And obviously, in hindsight, we're able to look at it and go, well, you know, of course, we feel good about it now. But, you know, I'm sure there was certainly some concern because it changes the offense a little bit, because Jordan Mason is not Christian McCaffrey. And I'm sure that they had the contingency plan of, let's, you know, here's the game plan if McCaffrey's playing, here's the game plan if it's Jordan, here's the game plan if both of them are able to play, and we have to, you know, load manage a little bit for McCaffrey and these sorts of things. But it still, like, reduces some of the things that you can do. And I'm sure there's an argument to be made that you know, they were able to do some different things. Like, did they use check a little bit differently in this game because Jordan Mason is not the receiving threat that McCaffrey is, although he did have a nice catch out of the backfield in the game. But, you know, in the end, I think the thing we learned is this team is pretty good. And really, the thing that we knew is that Kyle Shanahan and the Shanahan family is really good at getting the best out of running backs, and, you know, Bobby Turner on top of that as well. Like, it's a lot about the scheme. And yes, Christian McCaffrey is massively talented, and so he sort of transcends the scheme a great deal. But the fact that Jordan Mason was able to go in there and kind of like just like hit the hole and go was really important for the game. And it means that if they decide that they need to kind of slow roll this with McCaffrey a little bit and realize that this is a long season and it's more important than he's ready to go in December and January and hopefully into February than it is that he's ready on the, you know, week one. forget what fantasy owners care about and all that kind of stuff. Like, this team wants to get to the Super Bowl, and the way to do that is make sure that that Christian McCaffrey is ready to go, you know, in week 16 and 18 and, you know, hopefully the NFC championship game and the Super Bowl and all that stuff.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, I think George Kittle said it best. He said that the benefit of Christian not playing, benefit in the heaviest of air quotes, for all if you can imagine it, is that the Niners have to pare down their playbook because McCaffrey is one of one, and he lets you do so many different things. But without him, it's just, he said, just outside zone every single play and just show you can beat us. And I think it was a good thing to see that the 49ers can win this way. I think we all knew the 49ers could win this way, that they could run the ball 40 times and just absolutely dominate a defense in the trenches. The question is, like, can they win the other way? Can they just go in a high-octane, like, offensive shootout through the air? I think with McCaffrey, that's really possible. And if that's the case, then there's just, like, they have the answers to the test, right? The biggest thing is, how do you beat the 49ers? It used to be used to take away the run. Then it was you play hard and press man coverage. The 49ers keep on getting answers to those questions. And the more answers they have, the harder it will be for defenses to figure them out. The more likely that they'll be able to have continued success heading into the playoffs and the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, because now, if it's the Jordan Mason show for a couple of weeks, then when McCaffrey gets back, well, it's not like all of a sudden Jordan Mason's going to fall off the face of the planet. And I think what he's doing is building that trust with Shanahan, because we know how fickle that guy is. Like, let's just be honest. If he builds that trust with him over the next couple of weeks, even if it's not in a full-time role, but he showed on Monday night, like, that he can carry the offense if he needs to, and he did, you know, really effectively. And so I think it will be important. I think his ability to show that he can be counted on will be really important, because that's one thing that they've been lacking. It's the reason one of the reasons they traded for McCaffrey in the first place is because they were looking for a 1-2 punch. They decided they couldn't rely on Elijah Mitchell. And they've been trying to rely on Elijah Mitchell, even with McCaffrey here as the second guy. He's obviously hurt again and is on IR and is probably on his way out the door at the end of the season. But Jordan Mason is another find, and you just got to really, you know, tip your hat to this team. Just continue to find guys who can do the job. Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football was just going through the list of guys that they've had just with Kyle since they've been in San Francisco, you know, Raheem Mostert and, you know, the Matt Breida and that whole list of guys. And then he went into all the guys that his father found while he was in Denver. And it's just like, it's pretty impressive what they can do with the running game.
I agree. I mean, they have I was watching a couple of the, you know, kind of recaps. And one of the biggest things I thought was really interesting, people were just like, the Niners schemed open, like, their offensive line, which I've never, like, it makes sense to me, but I'd never heard it, like, phrased in that way. But they were scheming blocks. And I mean, Mason did an amazing part in his own right, just physical, dominant, hard-nosed running. And he offers something that McCaffrey can do, but he gives a different package for it. And I think that's the big deal, right? If you think about, like, 1-2 punches, it's always like this, like, kind of trite cliche of lightning and thunder. Right, you have the one running back who's fast and speedy, and you have the one running back who's, like, big and heavy. The Niners have two guys who can, like, run you over. The difference is one of them is also, like, probably a top, like, 15 slot receiver in the NFL as well. It is right. Just like I as, like, a casual fan am already thinking about all the amazing ways the Niners could get both McCaffrey and Mason on the field at the same time. And I think that's something that, like, has been achieved or opened up because of how good Mason played. So it's super exciting. He was already pushing for that wide receiver. No, I'm sorry. running back two spot against Elijah Mitchell. Christian McCaffrey's got me confusing positions, but he really dominated it, and I thought it was an amazing performance and really well deserved for a guy who like has clawed his way into a prominent position on this roster over the last 3 years.
Yeah, 100%. And then of course there's the unfortunate aftermath of the game that was just the nonsense stuff with the press conference and things that he mentioned after the game. You know, somebody asked him, I don't know. There was some confusion, right, over what he said after the immediate aftermath of the game about when he knew he was going to be quote unquote the starter. And of course everybody's up in arms about, oh, he said that Shanahan told him on Friday and yada yada. And it's just like people trying to find stories where stories do not exist. And Jordan Mason unfortunately got a little frustrated with the media at the press conference after the game, because they asked him again. They kind of asked him to kind of reiterate the things that he had said, and you could tell that he was a little upset by the, well, he was pretty upset by the fact that it seemed like there somebody, whether or not they were purposely trying to like bait him into saying something, like I don't know, but it certainly is like it's a non-entity for me, because the thing I keep coming back to is people want to make this like, oh, they were lying about McCaffrey's injury and yada yada, and it's like there's a difference between telling Jordan Mason like you're going to be the starter, and we don't know the context of that, like, because you can say Jordan Mason, you're going to be the starter, and because McCaffrey's going to be on a snap count, like we're only going to run him out there for 10 or 15 snaps kind of thing. I don't know. It just seems like a non-story. And I saw earlier this afternoon that the league has pretty much said the same thing, but it's just like, come on, just let the guy enjoy his moment. Like this is a massive game for him and he should be able to enjoy it and not have to worry about this other stuff.
Yeah, that was, I think it was probably like a slip of words. He was kind of like,
yeah.
When were you going to be a starter? When did you know that you were going to play type situation? Because, I mean, McCaffrey is one of those guys. If he's on the field, you're not getting on the field as another 49ers running back. So I think Shanahan kind of like mentioned it as well. And it's really unfortunate because, like you said, he definitely watched that press conference. He just not was happy to like have like answer those questions and be like, be on that stage, and it really sucks, right? Because that was his moment. He earned it. He dominated on Monday Night Football, primetime TV. He made a name for himself, and he just couldn't enjoy it as much as it was. So it's a pretty unfortunate end to what had to have been like an incredible night for him.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure we'll get into it more later, but into the numbers. But let's go ahead and move into the one up, one down part of the recap episode. So as a reminder, what we do is we talk about something that we liked and something that we didn't like about the game. Sometimes this can turn into like multiple things depending on on how the game goes. So Ashaz, we'll kick it over to you for this game, and you can go with the very obvious thing because I let you go first, and that's just the price I have to pay. So I'll kick it to you.
What one thing up? Everything. honestly, I think the Niners just played a phenomenal game in a lot of different ways. And despite like not really firing at all cylinders, but if I had to pick one thing that I thought was particularly amazing, I'm going to pick the run defense. I think they held the Jets to like 3.7 yards per carry, and that includes a couple like quarterback runs and a couple like garbage time runs as well. And for a 49ers team that really struggled against the run last year, that's a huge deal to be able to control the trenches, get a good running team off the field, and force them to get into passing situations if necessary. Just that one third and one where the Jets were making their final push, last gasp, line up and just couldn't get any push whatsoever, scared them out of running it on fourth and one, the third or fourth quarter. Like, that's dominance. That's a level of run defense we haven't seen the 49ers do in a very long time. The last one I can remember off the top of my head so clearly is when Robert Saleh was a defensive coordinator for the 49ers. I think it was against the Rams, and he's screaming and jumping because it's a fourth team. So many things you could say were amazing, but that's the big thing. A couple small things I want to highlight because I think they'll get overlooked, but I thought they were really good signs, and special teams in particular. One nugget that I definitely found online, and no one else did, is that Jake Moody had 2 field goals of 50-plus yards today and in his last game, which was the Super Bowl. Only through 4 other kickers had done that since 1991, including the playoffs. It was actually pretty recent in Matthew Prater in 2022, Graham Gano in 2022 as well, Brandon McManus in 2020, and Stephen Hauschka in 2017. But Moody was excellent. He seemed calm. He seemed poised. He hit some long, big field goals. And, I mean, that's exactly what you want from your second-year kicker because there are going to be games he has to win on his leg. And this was almost one of them. If it wasn't for how dominant the Jake Moody won this game for the Niners. The other small thing, really small, is that I love Jacob Cowing in the punt returner game. Only 2 returns, 7.5 yards average. I think he had a 7-yard return. But there was just like a level of competence, but like explosive competence. And it was like the smart type of returns. It was the type of return where you catch the ball at the 13, you see that there's like enough space for you, you get upfield a little bit, and then you scamper out of bounds. That's free yards that the Niners seem to have never taken advantage of for as long as I've been a fan, and definitely as long as Kyle Shanahan's been the head coach. And it's just things like that, they add up over time. Those 7 yards there save you from maybe a 3rd and 10 in the future, save you from an extra play in the middle of the field. Winning teams win everywhere, and they find ways to gain advantages wherever they can. And special teams, which has been much maligned for this team, I thought put forth a really, really great showing yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's all really well said. I was going to mention the run game. I was going to specifically also mention Malik Collins, who had just an absolute monster debut for the 49ers. He was like filling the gap and creating a lot of havoc in the middle. You mentioned that 3rd and 1 where Breece Hall just basically ran into his own guy. That was because Malik Collins just basically blew the thing up before it even got started. So if he can continue like doing that, then that will be an excellent return on investment for the 49ers. And obviously they're still missing, you know, Yetur Gross-Matos. But I think that the defensive, the new guys on the defensive line, Leonard Floyd, I thought played pretty well in his fairly limited snaps, but looks to be a good bookend for Nick Bosa over there. Fred Warner was Fred Warner. I thought D'Amador Lenore played really well. Had one little kind of hiccup. The one play that with the long pass to Garrett Wilson, I don't know how else you defend that the way that he did on that long drive. I think it was a 3rd down, and Aaron Rodgers just kind of put it where it needed to be. Lenore had the coverage, and there was nothing he could do. But then, of course, he also forced the interception where he made a nice play on a throw to Wilson, and tipped it over to Demetrius Flanagan-Fowles, who got the ball, and that worked out really nicely. Yeah, I think just a lot of good stuff. We haven't mentioned Jordan Mason's numbers, by the way. 28 carries, 147 yards, and a touchdown. Also caught one ball for 54 yards. Juwan Jennings quietly leading the team in receiving yards. 5 catches, 64 yards. Thought the offense, again, sputtered a little bit at the beginning, but it ultimately got going. And then I think we'd be just absolutely beside ourselves if we didn't mention that Dominic Pooney looks like a just absolute steal in the 3rd round. Just out there manhandling everybody. Thought Spencer Burford came in, and when Aaron Banks went out and played well at the left on the left guard side. Are we looking at our guard pairing for the next 3 or 4 years? I don't know. But, you know, the offensive line, which kind of came into the game, everybody was like hemming and hawing about how terrible it was going to be. I think they held up fairly well for the most part, especially against a good defensive line for the Jets. And that's really what it all comes down to, right? Is that we talked about this leading into the game, is this is probably the best defense the Niners are going to see for the rest of the season, possibly. And they didn't really look like it was that difficult. I mean, after the first couple of drives, that just like they just went, and that's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, the list, we can just go down the list on all the players who played really well. I want to highlight Fred Warner in particular, because I just like, he's so good. He's like, he's amazing. He's so talented. He just like, he takes away the middle of the field. He had that peanut punch right there. And he's just like he's a level of like talent that the 49ers are so lucky to have, because he completely changes the complexion of this defense. I think, you know, he will never get the tackle numbers to see like how like good he really is to get like traditional awards, but he deserves it because this guy should be a defensive player of the year. And I mean, I just thought he really stabilized the 49ers defense. He didn't miss many tackles either, which was even better to see. Just phenomenal performance by 54.
Yeah. Actually, for a little self-promotion, I wrote a thing last weekend leading up to the game for four bold predictions for the season. And one of them was that I thought that I didn't say that he was going to win the Defensive Player of the Year award, but that he was finally going to actually start, you know, get into that conversation where people are going to start mentioning his name as a possible candidate for it, recognizing that that's difficult to do at the middle linebacker position, barring, you know, a lot of sacks or interceptions or something like that. But he's, you know, started off well, one forced fumble in one game, and that should be good to go. So, all right. So it wasn't a perfect game, as we implied at the beginning. But what was something that you didn't like one down from you, Anchas?
You know, a couple small things that I don't think will be big issues long term, but obviously, Brandon Ayuk with a couple drops, I think that was like, that's the glaring thing. If you stare at this game, you're like, wow, Ayuk didn't really play very well. He also just wasn't, seemed to be in football shape yet, which both those things make perfect sense to me. He's just getting into the swing of things. It was always going to be like a kind of short run. And, you know, he just didn't play particularly up to his standard. And I think that just tells you how much potential this 49ers offense has, because there's a chance that in the future, Brandon Ayuk does get into that shape, does sort of pick things up. Then you add that to this offense already. So for me, I'd probably say that. I thought the passing game was a little lackluster, and I thought that the Niners, a large part of that came because like they just didn't have their main guy in Brandon Ayuk very good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, I think he'll get into form, and you know, within it's. You mentioned this at the top, like it should be a little scary for the rest of the league, barring everything else staying as it is. The fact that they were able to put up 32 points on this Jets defense, it's supposed to be very good, and they were missing Christian McCaffrey, basically missing Brandon Ayuk. I mean, he had a couple of catches for, you know, like 28 yards, something like that, but he missed a touchdown on like just an absolute dime of a pass from Brock Purdy. Who was, you know, a little up and down, but by and large, I think had some good throws, was let down by his receivers a little bit. And then, as we said, the offensive line took a little bit of time to kind of get going. So the start of his game was a little unsettled in a way that he figured it out as the game went along. And so you like to think that as Ayuk gets up to speed, as Trent Williams, who actually looked like he didn't miss anything out there. He's just Trent Williams. That's what he does. And as the rest of the team kind of gels together, I mean, I think it's good to see. My only real down was, you know, outside of that one drive from the defense, I thought, you know, kudos to Nick Sorensen, by the way, for you know, making the adjustments in game to kind of solidify whatever it is that needed to get done there. But obviously, as nice as it was to see Moody get on a heater and kick six field goals, especially two, just the circumstance under which those field goals happen, you'd like to see the offense be able to put it together a little bit. The first field goal comes after the Breece Hall fumble, and they have the ball at the Jets 32-yard line. They pick up 3 yards in three plays, really just 3 yards in one play, and then two incomplete passes that ended up, and then they had to kick the field goal. So that's a three and out, and then a field goal, not ideal. The second field goal came on a drive that was moving along. They got it in. They got it to the Jets 29. Wow, that's wild. apparently the Jets 29 was a problematic spot for them. And then they lost yardage and ended up kicking another field goal. They did end up getting the touchdown on the next drive. But then the following drive was another long drive. It was the one at the end of the half. We were joking in our Niner Noise Slack, like, are they like aggressively going for a touchdown here? That was when Ayuk dropped the ball in the back of the end zone. They ended up kicking a field goal. We were all laughing, kind of like, ha, of course he kicked a field goal there. When really I was actually pleased that they were going for a touchdown at least. So you'd like to see some of those drives turn into touchdowns later on, because this, I mean, they scored 32 points. That's pretty good. Most of the time, like if you average 32 points a game, you're probably in most of your games. Right. But at the same time, you look at it and you're like, man, they could have scored like 50 on these guys, like very easily, without even breaking much of a sweat with just a little bit of tinkering here and there. And I think that will come. And so it's both a little concerning, like this can't continue, but also like there's a lot of room to grow in spite of the fact that they scored 32 points in week one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was just like, I was really frustrated. I think at a couple points, it just felt as though they were out of sync. And it just didn't feel like 100%, which is, like, again, as we're saying, that's the really cool part, is that the Niners offense looked okay, I think, for those of us who watched this team quite a bit. It looked fine. It didn't look anything special, you know? Like, we've seen this team play much better on that game. And I agree that, like, fourth down, I thought for sure Shanahan should have gone for it. Also very disappointed that he didn't. Ayuk with that drop. Just a couple, like, weird execution mishaps. Lots of holding penalties, some of which I thought were, like, nonsense, but some of which were...
The Debo one on the first time that Jordan scored, that... Well, he wasn't doing anything.
Yeah,
that one was bad. I think the McKivitz one had, there was much to it either, but
yeah, I mean, that was like that was not great. There's not much more to say, but it's just like some procedural penalties. It was just like, it felt disjointed, but it was also dominant, which, you know, that's the San Francisco 49ers for you. I guess if that's their offense in a nutshell, it's like sometimes you look at it and you're like, how is this working? But it works, and it works really well. I also, I think one thing that I saw that I wasn't like a huge fan of, but I don't think it's a big deal. I thought Devondre Campbell didn't really have a great game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that, as the weak side linebacker. But, you know, new system, new scheme, asking different things of him. I can sort of understand that. And obviously he's filling in until Dre Greenlaw comes back. And when Greenlaw's back and hopefully fully healthy as he recovers from his own 20 carries, the Niners can kind of put Campbell into that situational role. But just a small thing, I was like, if there's one thing on defense, I was like, I don't know, that wasn't really the best. But Campbell was a little soft in some of those mid-zone drops.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and it is something that they're going to have to pay attention to, right? Because we talked about how, like, Aaron Rodgers basically just ignored Charvarius Ward. He was like, absolutely no interest in throwing the ball his way. I think the one time they did throw at him was when Tyrod Taylor nearly threw him an interception late in the fourth quarter. But they were pretty much like, no interest at all. And outside of maybe a play or two, Diamond Lenore pretty much managed to shut down his side of things. So most of the work that was done was very middle of the field. I think they knew, like, if there's a, you know, an obvious weakness, it's probably at the linebacker position where Fred Warner is not. And it's going to be something that Sorensen's going to have to pay attention to in the coming weeks. Cause I think, you know, teams are in this day and age where wide receivers can, you know, a guy like Garrett Wilson can be like, okay, well, he's an outside guy, but let's just put him in the middle in the slot because we can put him on a linebacker and he can and create that mismatch. That's going to be something that they're going to have to pay attention to, is try to avoid those situations as much as they can. Didn't really, this just kind of popped into my head. I didn't notice Renardo Green out there, outside of special teams. I know Isaac Yedem was out playing cornerback. It looked like he was mostly the third cornerback off the field. So I wonder if that's still something that they're going to kind of figure out. I'm just going to take a quick look at the snap counts here, see if I can get that while we're talking. Yeah, Isaac Adam looked like he played a lot more, 76% of the defensive snaps. So definitely something that will be interesting to watch. Renardo Green didn't play defense at all, actually, which is very interesting, and will be something to track throughout the rest of the time. But I think by and large, we don't really have a lot to complain about, considering the sort of doomy feeling that I don't know about you, but I sort of had when it was announced that McCaffrey wasn't going to play, and I was like, oh gosh, if they're even just a modicum off and the Jets defense is able to kind of do what I sort of expected them to do, this could be a problem. And it just frankly just wasn't.
I agree. I mean, you know, it just felt easy to them. It didn't look good, but it felt easy despite all the issues there. And I just, you know, it's weird because this is kind of like the tenor we had a lot of last year, too, where it was just like, I don't even know if they played that well, but they sure looked good when they played. And I think, you know, I think with week one here, you can definitely, it seemed very obvious the places this team could improve. And all that being said, they still put a 32 on what most likely will end up a top 10 defense in the NFL, was considered to potentially be the best defense in the NFL heading into this year. They did it in style. I just thought it was 49ers football, and there's not a lot of games where you can just be like, that's what the San Francisco 49ers are. This was one of those games.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's good to see, and obviously there's a lot of football left to play, and they have Minnesota next week, but that will be a problem that we can worry about next time. But I think that pretty much covers us for the opening opening recap of the season. Akshaz, you kind of did your final soliloquy there at the end, but did you have any other final thoughts to wrap it up before we take this one home?
I always have something to say.
Of course you do. That's why I always go to you, because I know that you've got it.
Well, you know, I'm gonna do first a plug to take a look at my game grades. Because I kind of want to echo something I mentioned there, which is that week one is cool. It's super exciting, but it's also not really that useful in understanding what a team's look like. You know, I remember 2 years ago, the Niners were looked god awful against the Bears in a monsoon, wound up in the NFC Championship game, had a real good shot at winning that before all the QB injuries occurred. And then way back, if you think about him, Jim Tomsula's first game as 49ers head coach, what a dominant, like, heartbreaking, talented performance against the Rams. Just a great game. We all know how that season went. So the Niners they're 1-0, which is a heck of a lot better than being 0-1. And you can see the trajectory for this team, but not too high, not too low. Let's see if they can start stringing some of these together. But it's nice to know that, you know, the sky hasn't fallen. The team is not collapsing.
No.
Some things are true. And one thing that thankfully remains true is the 49ers are pretty good at playing football.
As it turns out. Wasn't the Tom Sula game against the Vikings?
I feel like was it?
I think it was Minnesota. It was like, it was one of those years they played the second Monday Night Football game or something like that. It was like, started at like, 10
Am I remembering the Chip Kelly game?
I think you are remembering the Chip Kelly game. Yeah, because the Tom Sula one was like Carlos Hyde. He hit the spin. I can still see it in my head, like him hitting the spin cycle on the linebacker and scoring a touchdown. And then they put up that ridiculous graphic about how he had a 1,000 winning percentage. And it was the best winning percentage in 49ers history, and stupid because he'd won two games, and then it all fell apart.
Yeah. Well, so both of them are a good example.
The Niners won
that one 23, and then in the Chip Kelly era, they won a good one against the Rams, and That was even worse somehow.
They only won one other game that year or something like that.
I think it was the last one, too, that cost them the first overall pick. Boy. if I have to wrap up this podcast, I'll wrap it up with that. Just be glad we're not watching a team that's looking forward to the draft right now. We're watching a team that's looking forward to February. Honestly, there's nothing else you can ask for then.
Yeah, I'm just hoping the proximity to a team that's looking forward to the first overall pick will not you know, rub off on me. That's all I got to say. Oh, man, it's really rough. All right. Well, well said. That just kind of like that went into chaos, but I think it was still good. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks as always for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.